Good Saturday morning to everybody, and welcome to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show, along with Steve Glick, Chief Administrative Officer for Chamber Insurance Trust. I'm Gary Byron. Steve, good morning there, my friend. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing today?
Oh, not too shabby. How's your summer treating you?
Summer is treating me well.
We're in August now.
But I'm excited about our guest today.
I know you are. You've been talking about it. He goes right to it.
I go back as a child to the good old days of the Lone Ranger and other things. Every good cowboy had a great horse. And say there. But I'm thrilled to have her here today and everyone out there to help her promote her program, which we will talk about.
There's a huge event that's coming up, too. We're going to have her talk about it. It's occurring on August 19th over in Avon. We'll get her to talk about that as well. She's actually making her second appearance on Flashpoint. Let's welcome back to the show Susan Mitchell. Susan, good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
All right.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's a pleasure, actually. And you know what? It's been a while, probably about a year, maybe a year and a half since the last time that you were here. Do this. Give us some, for people who are maybe newer to the show,
sure.
Give us a little bit of background of you and your experience with horses as well as your organization. Was it U.S. Horse Rescue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, so I was a nurse in a previous career and had a massive foot surgery back in 2013. And during the healing process, I was online and reading all these stories about horses. In the process, I started learning a lot about horses going to slaughter, and I was really taken back by it. There was one story in particular that where this young girl went on Facebook one morning and she saw a picture of a horse that looked just like her horse that she had when she was young, and a rescuer just taken it out of a slaughter lot. And she called the rescuer, and it turned out it was her horse, in
wow.
fact. And she went there, and she went into the she hadn't seen the horse, and she was 9. Now she's 17. She goes in the stall with the horse, and she says the horse's name, and she had taught the horse tricks, and the horse recognized her and started to bow. And that literally, right, that's a turning wow. moment in my life. You know, I usually cry when I tell this story because it was such a turning point in my life. It was like nothing else mattered. And I really kind of decided then I wasn't going back to nursing. I needed to get the word out. I've loved horses all my life. And if I didn't know this, how many people didn't know this, right? So that prompted this whole thing about creating the organization U.S. Horse Welfare at the time. That's what it was. And it was really about advocating for horses and educating the public as well as horse owners about horses going to slaughter. But, you know, you go online and you see these gorgeous little eyes that look at you and you're like, oh, I can't let this one go to slaughter. I can't let that one go to slaughter. So it becomes U.S. Horse Welfare and Rescue. And then 1 becomes 2 becomes 4 becomes 8 to now we have 16. and they're just amazing creatures. So and then you get a lot of volunteers. And in the process of bringing in these volunteers, we started discovering that there was this organic need to develop programs that help the community. People were coming to us and they weren't necessarily telling us what their struggles were, their personal struggles, mental health or emotional, sometimes physical issues. And they were just kind of coming to volunteer. But over time, they get to know you and they start letting you know what's going on inside. And you find out that you've got this beautiful 17-year-old girl who's cutting herself. And that's why her mother brings her there. And you have a beautiful 14-year-old who has threatened suicide. And you have a 15-year-old who did try to commit suicide and now has brain damage. And so these people all gravitate to us. And so in the process of this, it was like, what are we doing? I mean, the community needs these horses. They need the healing that these horses provide. So we now run a ton of programs. And we also do riding lessons for the neurotypical individual, well-bodied neurotypical individual, as well as neurodivergent, which would include autistic or Down syndrome or some of the other diagnoses that are out there. So we do all of those things, right? We do a lot of great programs. And that's kind of how we got started. That started in 2016 is when we became a nonprofit.
So it was founded in 2016. It was a foot surgery that you had in 2013.
2013,
excuse
yeah.
me. Yeah. But, to go from the very early stages of this to where you are now,
yeah,
you know, and how really you've become not only an authority, but really a sanctuary or
yes.
or for these horses. And like you said, the individual owners, because a lot of people, they love horses, And if you're fortunate enough and have the, can afford one, and you're able to have ownership, but oftentimes they're not stored at your house.
I mean, right.
They're at a place that can
right.
that can house these. You
right.
know, so there's really 24 hour a day maintenance for these horses, right?
That, yeah, yeah.
I find it all fascinating. Where do they come from?
That's a really good question. So when we started, most of our horses were coming from slaughter lots. You know, what happens is that little Janie outgrows her pony and mom and dad don't know better. And they listen to the barn owner and the horse goes to an auction house. Or it's a racehorse. It's just not doing well on the track, not winning. Or it's a quarter horse that just is not going to ever win anything. It's just mm-hmm. overbred. And these horses need somewhere to go. So unfortunately, they go to an auction. And if they're lucky enough to have some talent and they're young enough, they might be purchased by someone such as myself who might go to an auction looking for a horse. But very often, they're picked up by what we call kill buyers. And the kill buyers buy a bunch of them, maybe for $75 or $100. They take them back to their lot. They'll pack 30 into an area that I would maybe put two horses in, and then they will, you know, get enough that they will put them on a trailer and they will ship them to slaughter. So initially, this is where my horses were coming from. And then COVID hit. And during COVID, there were a lot of people reaching out to me saying, we don't have jobs. We can't care for our horses. We can't keep them. I don't know what to do. And I would have to give thought to whether or not this was a horse that if it went into the auction pipeline, would it stand a chance of coming out on the right end or was it going to come out on the wrong end? And I would value that based on the age of the horse, et cetera. And so we started bringing in more of the community horses that were at risk of ending up in bad places. And so it's kind of a combination. Most of our horses today are from private owners in the area that just can't keep them anymore because, you know, people don't realize horses live to be 40. And so a lot of us don't get horses till we're in our 40s. We either have them when we're teenagers or we get them when we're in our 40s, not thinking that, oh my God, you know, I may have a bad knee in 20 years and I can't get out there to feed the horse anymore. We don't think this way. So all of a sudden, you have a bad knee or you have a bad heart or whatever, or you just don't have the funds anymore, like you said, right? And so being there for the community is really important. And that's why it actually is named U.S. Horse Welfare and Rescue. I've always wanted it to be an organization where no matter where you are in the country, you can call us and we will help guide you through so that you don't have to make bad choices for your horse.
All right. So just to be clear, are you rescuing them? Are you rehabbing them? Are you adopting them out? Or do some stay with you forever?
Yeah, a lot of them now are staying with us forever because a lot of the ones we do take in, when we were getting them out of the slaughter lot, we were getting some younger standardbreds and thoroughbreds that had the ability to be rehabbed and rehomed. A lot of these horses that we're getting right now are older. They're, like I said, they're local horses, and they have some sort of a health issue. It's either their age or they have something that's going on with them that make them at high risk if I put them out there. So we try to keep them there, and just they have these wonderful programs that they do, and we take good care of our horses.
How many do you have currently?
16.
All right. Now, are they all owned by you, or are they owned? Are there other owners, and they're kept on your property?
We have a few that are owned. There's one that's my personal horse. We have one that is our trainer's horse. We have a little mini donkey right now that we're housing for the summer for the Southington Ag Program because school's out and they needed a place for it to go. So she hee-haws for us every morning, and we all love it. And we have a new boarder who is a little mini paint with blue eyes, and she's deaf. And so that's what we have. The others are all, so 12 of them belong to the organization.
Wow. Any come across a situation where some of the horses just don't get along with each other?
Always.
Well, I guess I answered that.
Always, yeah. Well, I mean,
what do you do in that situation?
So most of our horses, most of them are in their own paddocks because the risk of being kicked or the risk of their being pushed off their food, et cetera. We're really very particular about how we care for our horses. Every horse gets a weighed hay bag. We know exactly how many pounds of hay each horse is getting a day and exactly how many pounds of grain they're getting. And if you put them in together, you literally have one is going to be more dominant than the other. Always. It's just going to happen naturally. So there's one that will get pushed off his hay, and then he's not getting the calories he needs. So this is how we do it. Yeah.
You have a lot of, I remember the, you were offering programs the, the last time that we were chatting. Can you go into some of those?
I would love to. We're going to be starting a new program called Senior Moments for seniors to come just from, you know, the community or from nursing homes, whatever, and spend some time, have coffee, Danish, you know, sit and visit and learn a little bit about horses. Maybe if they're well enough and healthy enough, they can groom a horse and just participate and get out and get some fresh air. I mean, seniors are very shut in a lot. They don't have a lot of reason and a lot of ability to get out and do things. So this gives them a chance to do something other than a book club or bridge or, you know, so it's, we're excited about that. We do a little reading program with the little mini called Storytime with Stormy. And that's for children 3 through 5 to come and experience the farm and just get some fresh air. Some of our more powerful programs are Horsepower and Healing with Horses. Horsepower is really for your neurotypical kid who's struggling with anxiety, depression, being bullied, just feeling like they don't quite fit in, not sure where, what to do or where to go. And that program really helps them assimilate with some social skills, life skills, and they get a lot of good quality horse time. And then Healing with Horses is very similar program, but it's for your more neurodivergent, which is the autistic or the Down syndrome type individuals or perhaps traumatic brain injury people who need a program that moves a little bit slower for them so that they can assimilate to things.
Yeah, you were mentioning, you know, some people who are suicidal or, or, you know, suffer from anxiety or depression and, you know, neurodivergent, even including autistic. I guess this question has more to do with the other populations that you serve. I like how you mentioned seniors. But in kids, I mean, what kind of, I'm not even sure if it's an age demographic, what kind of person owns a horse, is into the whole lifestyle of even ridership of horses? Because there are people, I know personally people who just can't afford a horse or can't maintain a horse, but they love going horseback riding.
Yeah.
Tell me about that person.
So I think that's where we have a little bit of a niche also, is that our property is very, very different. We sit up high off the hill. You know, nobody sees us from the road. And it's very calm. It's very serene. It's not like a typical riding stable. So you have your individuals who are very focused on, they want to get to the point where they're showing their you know, they're jumping. They really have this goal of becoming a great, great, great rider that maybe eventually gets to the point where they're doing Grand Prix type of thing. But then you also have a population of individuals, adults, children through adults, who do struggle with anxiety, or they don't want that big showy thing and they don't feel comfortable at those bigger stables. And so they come to us for something that's a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more healing, more nurturing. Interestingly, on the other day, I was interviewed for, we got a small grant from Avon Better Together, and they came out to do a little piece that they're going to show at a reception in October. And when I was finished talking about our programs, and it's not unusual to see me cry when I start talking about the people that we affect and how much they've grown as individuals and how happy they are. It's very moving to me. So I get a little teary. And when I was done talking, she literally turned to me and she said, "This is so different than what I thought it was." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "Yeah." She said, I kind of thought you were like a wealthy riding place for wealthy people." And
the hoity-toity.
And so I was a little taken back. And I thought, oh, I think we have to kind of rebrand ourselves somehow. Because if anything, we're looking to, you know, we're looking to find sponsors to help us bring in children who cannot afford our programs. You know, we have our Barn Buddies and our Teens to the Rescue. I mean, I've just touched on our programs. We have so much that we can offer kids. But there's a lot of people, even though our prices are ridiculously cheap, there's still people that can't afford it. And we can only cut our prices so much because it's called insurance. And you don't want to know about that, right? So it is what it is. There's a risk with horses.
How are you funded?
Donations, a lot of donations. And our programs, our riding lessons. Really, I'm a big believer in the more you keep the horses healthy, if something happened to me tomorrow and everything had to shut down, the healthier I keep these horses, the more skills I let them have and keep up with, the better chance they will find a good home if something happens to me. So they, through these programs, they actually buy their feed and they buy their grain. And my husband and I do not make any money. No one. I mean, we have one person who makes money off, you know, and that's our lesson instructor. Everybody else is volunteer. We charge nothing for the use of our property. you know, it's all through donations and in our programs. That's it.
That's incredible. I
yeah, it's a big chunk of money too.
How do you solicit?
She's one of a kind.
But I don't know how you even solicit donations, fundraisers, and
yeah. Well, our fundraiser this fundraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, I want to talk about that. Let me just do something really quickly, folks. You are listening to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show, along with Steve Blick, Chief Administrative Officer for Chamber Insurance Trust. I'm Gary Byron. You can contact Steve Glick very easily, by the way. Got a couple of different ways. Online at www.citrust.com, as well as his toll-free number, which is 800-953-4467. Our guest this morning from U.S. Horse Welfare and Rescue, Susan Mitchell. Susan, yeah, I definitely want you to go into this event. It's called Mustangs by Moonlight. Tell us everything about it.
Okay. So Mustangs by Moonlight is going to be there's different levels of participation that people can choose from. But it is actually going to be showing the documentary, The Mustangs, America's Wild Horses, done by Stephen Latham, narrated by Robert Redford. Jessica Springsteen is one of the directors and producers, and Stephen Latham is the main producer and director. He's a 3-time Emmy Award winner, and he's actually flying in for the event. So we're super excited that he's going to be with us for the cocktail reception at the property. And there'll be cocktails and hors d'oeuvres starting at 5:30 if people choose to be on that level, or they can just come for the movie. The documentary will be showing it at 7 o'clock in the evening. We will be having a little bit of what we call a hug-a-horse, which is an opportunity for people to get up close and personal and actually put their arms around a horse and hug it and feel the benefits of it. And this is a big fundraiser for us. This is, you know, we're hoping to make enough money to buy the food and the grain for the next year for the event. It's a remarkable event.
Will Robert and Jessica be there as well?
I wish. I mean, I think we're going to have a couple signed posters from Robert Redford. That's what Stephen has said he was going to do. Yeah, so I'm hoping. Right.
How much does it cost to attend?
The VIP tickets are $125 a piece, and just the standard tickets are $35 a piece for lawn seats for the movie, and that includes 2 drink tickets. So it's not a lot of money when you consider it's 2 drink tickets. You go for a drink anywhere, right? These days, it's, what, $13? It's crazy.
To be clear, though, is this a movie or a documentary? Are there actors?
It's a documentary about the wild horses, which is a whole other thing that I think America really needs to know about. There's a lot going on with these wild horses.
All right, so it's a movie about the wild Mustangs.
Correct. It's a documentary about the wild Mustangs.
A documentary.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What do you want people to know about them?
Okay. So some statistics, and I do have to read these off because it's too much to remember. So currently our wild horse population is estimated to be 82,884. They do keep very close numbers on these.
How do they do that? Because they're wild.
They're wild, but they're in what we call herd management areas, HMAs, and so they are on 27 million acres of land in our in our country in 10 states, and but they're watched over very carefully, and we have in holding facilities almost 62,000. So 82,000 in the wild, 62,000 that are literally rounded up and standing in corrals like sandwiches, and they probably will live out their life there. And we do these horrible roundups with helicopters. When I say we, it's the Bureau of Land Management. You'll hear us talk about BLM. It's Bureau of Land Management is what it stands for. And they do these helicopter roundups, and they come down and they swoop over these horses very low, and they chase them and chase them and chase them until they finally get so tired they finally will succumb to going into a gated area, and they close them in. Now, in the past week and a half, we have lost 11 wild horses. One stallion jumped over, tried to jump free, caught his leg, broke his leg in a very tragic injury. We've had mares, we've had 3 or 4 mares that literally broke their necks running into the, because they're running so fast, they run into the corral where they're trying to capture them. They hit something, they break their necks. Another one broke his neck. We've lost foals that are out there. And this all costs, let me just give you some statistics. So the cost to maintain and round up the wild horses in 2022 was $136 million, taxpayer dollars.
Holy smokes.
Right. So other statistics that you may be interested in knowing is that all of these roundups, they're done, they're contracted, they contract the cattlemen to do the roundups. And the cattlemen are the ones that benefit from all of this. First of all, they benefit from it because then they turn the land over to the cattle. But they also, the cattlemen in the last 10 years have made 89% of the contract funds go right to them. Over $333 million since 2004 have gone to 54 contracted cattlemen just to hold the horses. That's the long-term holding. Then there's the short-term holding. Then there's the roundups. The helicopter roundups, it's estimated that every horse that we round up costs us $800 to $1,000 of taxpayer money. And this is all because they don't want to do the darting. There's a way to dart the horses to it with a fertility control. They dart the mares. And so there's ways that we can get around it. But they're lazy. They don't want to do it. They don't want to follow up and do this. So this is their solution. And as I said, it's also the cattlemen gain the land. And what happens is they degrade the land terribly, because what literally happens, horses will eat a little here and there, and they just kind of wander around and they eat. The cattle do not really move. They literally will kind of stay, and they will eat everything, including the roots, because they're ruminant animals. The way they digest, they can digest roots. So they will take everything. So when they're done degrading an acre of land, there's nothing left to grow back. It's going to take 3 to 5 years for anything to start sprouting, whereas a horse doesn't do that. And then there's the water consumption, because cattle, you know, they eat many more pounds a day than horses do, like 5 times more, 6 times more. And their water consumption is 5 or 6 times more, too. So they degrade the streams, our water sources, everything. It's a huge thing that America needs to know about. And we need to stand up and say, you know, no, this isn't okay anymore.
We don't have the cowboys from the Wild Wild West that are rounding, you know, that's where my mind just automatically goes to.
Right. The cowboys are in helicopters now, Gary.
Yeah, right. No, yeah. Exactly. That's yeah. What I was going to say. I'm like, yeah, you're on a horse and you use their lasso. And I'm just thinking of the old, spaghetti westerns that Clint Eastwood used to make back in the 50s. But truth be told, there are still wild horses in the U.S. Are they aggressive?
No, they're not aggressive. And you know, I hate to say it, but the truth is they're lying to us when they say the horses are degrading the land. There's 27 million acres. There's 82,000 horses on 27 million acres. They're not degrading the land, Gary. They're not. They're, you know, that's ridiculous. And if you can take 600 horses off a piece of land and 2 months later have 3,000 cattle out on that same land, how can you literally say that the horses were degrading the land? It's this huge lie that just keeps precipitating down the line.
All right. So how can people help your organization then in the cause? I mean, obviously you want them, before you can even donate, before you can volunteer, before you can help, you want to know what's this cause, right? I mean, I guess education would be number one. Know what you're getting involved with.
Right.
But what would the steps that you would recommend people to take?
Well, I would love to see people, first of all, just on their own, go on and read about the wild horses and really educate themselves about what's going on with the Bureau of Land Management and have a voice. You know, I get frustrated with our own senators and congressmen in Connecticut. We don't have wild horses here, so I think it just becomes like a back burner issue. But if we don't all stand up, we're literally going to lose the wild horses at some point in time. They're going to narrow the breeding pot to the point where there's going to be inbreeding, and that's not going to be good. So that becomes an issue. So I want people to do that, but I'd love for people to go to our website, which is www.ushorsewelfare.org, and find out more about us. All the money that we bring in goes to the horses. As I said, the only person that gets paid is our instructor, and she gets paid off the lessons she does. So every penny that comes in helps maintain the horses we have, but it also helps us help other people. We have given money to people out in Texas that need to euthanize their horses and they don't have the money. And so I call the vet and we give money to the vet to take care of it. So we do a lot of good with the money. We provide the programs. And then for this event, they can go to us-horses.org and it'll take them right to Eventbrite where the tickets are sold.
I want to bring Steve Glick into the conversation. I'm just curious, how do you take volunteers?
We love our volunteers. They make all the difference in the world. So they can go to the website again, or honestly, they can literally send an email to ushorsewelfare@gmail.com. My personal phone number is 860-593-4298. People can text me or call me and say, when can I come visit? We'll get them over. We don't say no.
Look at you. You give me your personal number.
I do.
That's
whatever.
How dedicated she
yeah.
is. I've got to ask the magical question. Tickets. How do you get tickets? Where do you go?
Yeah, tickets. US-horses.org will take you right to the ticket site on Eventbrite. If you want to know more about the event itself, then, you know, you go to the website, or like I said, you're free to reach out to me. I'm available. My phone rings too much. I'll just shut it off. I won't complain.
US-horses.org
takes you to tickets.
Right. And yeah. But your website is US-horsewelfare.org.
Correct.
You know, yeah. Steve, have you ever ridden a horse? I've ridden a horse. I rode a horse in Honduras.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I like in a movie along the beaches
yes.
of Honduras. So I was in Central America.
I was fortunate that I had an uncle that had a farm 10 minutes away from me and had horses. And so I've had the opportunity as a child to deal with that. And now I'm thinking about the work that I do. I'd like to see if I can help build this into a program, a service throughout the state of Connecticut with, you know, chambers of commerce.
I would love to.
That would be great. Yeah. I want to remind you of the date. It's August 19th. August 19th in Avon at 345 Waterville Road. The reception for VIP ticket holders will start at 5:30. But then general admission and the documentary begins at 7 o'clock. And it looks like Stephen Latham, he's going to be right there. Offer some remarks in the whole nine yards. Folks, if you'd like more information, I'd like to thank our guest, Susan Mitchell. What a wealth of information and a heart of gold in trying to, you know, save these wild horses. Again, you can contact her at her website at ushorsewelfare.org. And 860, is it 593?
Yes.
4298.
Yes.
If you'd like some information on Chamber Insurance Trust, that's easy to obtain as well. Simply head online to www.citrust.com. Again, www.citrust.com. Steve Gliss got a toll-free number himself, 800-953-4467. Again, toll-free, 800-953-4467. For Steve Glick, Chief Administrative Officer for Chamber Insurance Trust, I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show. Until next Saturday morning, have a good one, everybody. Bye-bye.